Welcome to Within the Realm. I'm your host, Steve Garrett. Here at Within the Realm, we are often asked where our story ideas originate. They are stories that are inspired by my experiences, interests, and relationships. They are stories already existing within my realm, but this podcast looks a little deeper into each one of those stories. There is always more to the story. And that brings us to our subject today. One, David Crockett, King of the Wild Frontier. This would be the perfect spot to play a few bars of a familiar song about the subject of our story. The copyright to that song is owned by a powerful entertainment company fronted by a mouse, so there will be no copyright infringement today. We owe a debt of gratitude to said mouse for Mr. Crockett's enduring place in American folklore, but more about that in a moment. Crockett, one of Tennessee's most famous sons, is of course also known for having died as one of the defenders of the Alamo in 1836. During his lifetime, he was already known as a larger-than-life backwoods folk hero. He was a congressman when a new stage play, The Lion of the West, became popular. The play featured Nimrod Wildfire, a thinly disguised take on Crockett. Shortly thereafter, an unauthorized biography appeared that continued the outlandish portrayal of the congressman from Tennessee as, quote, half horse, half alligator, and a touch of the earthquake, end quote. In his own time, he was a celebrity, and the nature of his death at the Alamo did all the more to elevate him to the status of American folk hero. Even 120 years after his death, the previously mentioned Mouse Associated Company produced several films starring Fess Parker as a characterization that had more in common with Nimrod Wildfire than it did with the actual David Crockett. Crockett hated the public image the stage play and the unauthorized biography created for him. He tried, unsuccessfully, to control his own image. He did write his own autobiography and left us several letters and speeches that show us more about the man. But it was this frontier image that brought the man into my realm. Like many a young boy in the early days of television, I idolized the American heroes. The frontiersmen and the explorers were of special interest to me. But as I learned my history, I came to agree with David that Crockett the man was in fact more interesting than Crockett the legend. I was lucky enough to have a conversation with Michael Wallace, author of David Crockett, The Lion of the West, published in 2011. The book covers the frontiersman's career in Congress, his opposition to Andrew Jackson's Indian Removal Bill, and the personal and political price he paid for it.
Well, should we discuss Mr. Crockett? Hopefully, I've retained enough of my knowledge of Crockett to be of use to you. It's been a while.
The aspect of Mr. Crockett that I would like to delve into is his opposition to President Jackson and Indian removal. That strikes me as something that was probably very unusual for a frontiersman and a Tennessean.
It was quite unusual for anyone from the mid to deep South to take on Andrew Jackson, but also to not, in the eyes of the masses, properly represent his constituents, many of them dirt farmers and frontiersmen, many of them squatting literally on land that belonged to various tribal people. This is probably one of David Crockett's shining moments, if not the primary shining moment, when he took on a man he had been aware of and known for quite a while, Andrew Jackson. Or Old Sharp Knife is the translation in English. I think of what the Creeks called him, Sharp Knife. They didn't call him Old Hickory. But Jackson, as we now all know, if we were living even then, in that early part of the 19th century, first half of the 19th century, first third, it was obviously no friend of any of the Indian tribes. He kept pushing the tribes, first as a military leader during those early wars around the War of 1812, but that continued as president. And Crockett, as a volunteer militiaman and frontiersman, as a scout and hunter during those conflicts, he himself had witnessed so many atrocities, so much useless killing and slaughter, that he vowed to himself he really didn't want to take any more human life or see it taken, which, of course, he was not able to do, because in the end he died in combat in the Mexican state of Tejas, and that's a whole other story. He didn't mind killing bears. He was a professional hunter and probably killed more than 350 bears, but he certainly had enough killing of Native American people, that's for sure. So when the Indian Removal Bill came along in 1830, Crockett immediately took it on as his cause celeb and suggested to Jackson that, I think we have bothered and confronted these people enough. Let's let them be. Why should we enact this legislation to remove them, to actually take them off their ancestral homes, their land? And of course, that was a philosophy that was totally opposed to Jackson's and to his, not only his political supporters, but again, to Crockett's constituents back home. But this was incredibly controversial legislation in both the House and the Senate. Jackson was determined to see it passed. And of course, the five tribes, Cherokee, the Chickasaw, the Choctaw, the Creek, and the Seminole, were all going to be impacted by this. And if you notice, I didn't say the five civilized tribes. I find that term very, actually, offensive and pejorative. It's totally an Anglo term. But so old Sharp Knife, however, like many of the people in leadership roles, and had this very paternalistic outlook of Indians. And again, that goes way back to his youth. He basically considered all Indians to be an inferior race of people. The one thing that often happened is if someone bucked the trend or went against the grain with Jackson, they were in for a rude awakening, because he was tenacious. He was a tenacious fighter, literally and figuratively. He wouldn't have it for anyone, especially a rural Tennessean representing Jackson's own state in Congress. So they became at odds. Crockett went on to deliver in the halls of Congress an incredible address championing the cause to let these people be, to let them alone. And ultimately, what that did, of course, he wasn't successful. In fact, eventually, the Indian Removal Act was, after considerable debate on the floor, was passed, and it happened. And hence, we have the various and plural Trails of Tears. But that speech, which ended up being published in 1930, as prepared remarks, they were entered into the House of Representatives before the passage of the bill. They really, really shed a great deal of light on Crockett's integrity, and I think his courage to be willing to take a stand, even against the president. As an aside, something that's totally lacking in a lot of the Congress, especially the Senate today, who don't seem to have the courage or inclination to take on the current commander-in-chief.
What was it that gave Crockett the will, the backbone, the courage, whatever you'd want to call it, to take on the office of the presidency, to take on this man that he knew was a tenacious fighter and a bitter enemy? What was it that made Crockett do such a thing when others did not?
Well, I think it can be summed up in what I used to believe was just a phrase created by Walt Disney or or some early biographers, but in fact, I found that it's a credo, a personal motto of Crockett's that he actually uttered several times. And basically, it's this: always, always be sure you are right, and then go ahead. And that's exactly what Crockett did. And again, it gets back to his fortitude, his courage, the humanity that somehow, somewhere was within him to call up that compassion and be able to distinguish what is right and what is wrong, what is fair and what is unfair. And I think once he was a very determined man. And he obviously proved to be just as determined as Andrew Jackson himself. So he took his stand and he stayed there and he kept it. It cost him, of course, his political career, because then he was, and Jackson and others found a candidate to run against Crockett. As Crockett always liked to point out, he was a one-legged man, but they voted him out of Congress, and in an attempt to rebuild his life and start all over again, he unwisely listened to some of his old pals down in Mexico, in the Mexican state of Tejas, who were land speculators and trying to build a cotton economy down there, and rebel and take it from the Republic of Mexico. And he went down there to see if he could get a piece of land and start over again. He certainly had, as we like to say here, no dog in that fight. He wasn't that interested. He didn't own any slaves. Slavery was a big part, of course, of that Anglo-Texan movement, because they were building a plantation economy in the South and in Texas, and bringing in many, many slaves. Slavery had been abolished by the new Constitution of Mexico. Slavery was illegal, but they kept coming in. So hence we have this conflict. And Crockett took his good old time getting down there, but when he got down there, he did find some land he liked. And they said, well, you can have the land, but you're going to have to pay your dues and go into the militia here first. And then they promptly sent him down to San Antonio de Bahar, where a lot of the anti-Jackson people were. And there at 49 years of age, Mr. Crockett lost his life.
Well, I had read that Mr. Crockett had a particular dislike for Martin Van Buren and had vowed that if he were to be president, he would leave the United States.
Again, Crockett could be very outspoken in his views. It could get him into trouble sometimes. But once again, always be sure you're right and then go ahead. So he did it. Onward and upward.
Toward the end of our conversation, Michael and I had a chance to reflect on the things that had originally attracted us to David Crockett. I grew up as a kid with a coonskin cap and admiring Mr. Crockett, mostly because of John Wayne in the movie The Alamo. Being a student of history, I actually found out that there was a lot to this complicated man rather than this ultimate sacrifice.
Well, you've just outlined exactly my experience. I'm sure I'm a bit older than you. And if you recall in the introduction to my book, I explain how I first encountered Crockett. And it's when Fez Parker leaped out of that black and white RCA Victor TV set in my parents' living room into my lap, you know, like a runaway truck. And here was the Crockett of Fez Parker of Disney. Kind of came off like some kind of almost burlesque figure sometimes, sort of a country bumpkin, you know. And when he went off to Congress there, you know, he was in a coonskin hat and his fringed frontier outfit. Of course, like you, as I grew older, became very involved in history, and I learned that Crockett was much, much more than that. He was not a buffoon. He was not illiterate. He was, in fact, very wise, and a lot of it came from good old country wisdom, from backwoods knowledge and good woods lore, but a lot of it was plain old country common sense. And that combined with a really strong inner core can make someone very successful in everything they attempt. And Crockett, like all of us, and like all figures from history, always, of course, remains a flawed man. We're all flawed. But he certainly was much more than the Crockett that was perfectly good as entertainment for us when we were kids. But I just felt it was time to tell the adult story. So that's what we did.
The name David Crockett brings to mind a particular image, a fanciful one with a heroically tragic ending. Had it not been for that ending, would Crockett's memory have faded into the footnotes of history? Would his memory be overshadowed in the same way that his legend overshadows Crockett's tenure in the United States Congress? According to Wallace, it was during that tenure Crockett's shining moment occurred, taking his stand against Andrew Jackson's Indian Removal Bill. He was unsuccessful, and it cost him tremendously. And if not for the need to rebuild his livelihood and his career, Crockett may not have been at the Alamo that morning in March of 1836. A tragic end, indeed. But the real hero of this story, in my mind, is Representative Crockett, not the mighty bear hunter or the teller of tall tales. The congressman who opposed a mighty president and even his constituents to do what he thought was right. The hero of this story is the representative who believed, "Be always sure that you are right, then go ahead." Often we like to think of our American heritage as solely bear killing, winning at all costs, or dying in a hail of enemy fire. It also is taking stands based on principle, even when you find yourself standing alone. David Crockett's tenacious adherence to his credo is the thing that makes him an American hero. I would highly recommend Michael Wallace's book, David Crockett, The Lion of the West. It's an informative and entertaining read. Michael has several other books, just as informative and entertaining, regarding subjects as varied as Route 66, Charles Pretty Boy Floyd, the Donner Party, and the first female chief of the Cherokee Nation, Wilma Mankiller. Mr. Wallace was gracious enough to visit with me as he has been working on his 20th book, the first national biography of the Bandit Queen, Belle Starr. That book will be available during the Christmas season in 2020. Thanks for joining us on this episode of Within the Realm. I would like to thank author Michael Wallace for the very enjoyable and informative interview. You can find a full archive of our episodes at our website, withinpodcast.com. While there, check out our blog and other podcast info. You can interact with us on social media. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Just look for Within the Realm. We would love to hear from you. Be sure to recommend us to your podcast listening friends. We are on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and all major podcast channels. If you like this episode or one of our other episodes, feel free to leave a rating and review. Within the Realm is produced by me, Steve Garrett. Our theme music is by 556 and a half. And, as always, thanks for listening.